Live from our nation's capital.
How do we reopen this economy?
The latest on how this pandemic is impacting farmers.
What does this do for the United States' relationship with China?
Bloomberg Sound On. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
We're responding to this crisis, and manufacturers are stepping up like never before.
We're looking at 70 candidates for different vaccines.
How do we make sure a pandemic of this scale never happens again?
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
Breaking news, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says the Senate could hold a Supreme Court vote before Election Day. We've got every angle covered on the Supreme Court saga. Now just 2.5 days removed from the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Plus, stocks pair losses as tech rally tempers bank rout, the latest on the economy, and how the coronavirus continues to wreak economic havoc and health havoc on the country. Lots to get through on a very important, very busy day. We have every angle covered of the Supreme Court. And next hour, we're going to talk with Congresswoman Judy Chu, who represents California's 27th congressional district. And then we're also going to check in with Rick Davis, who, of course, is the former campaign manager to Senator John McCain and now a partner at Stonecourt Capital. Nobody better than the than to give us insights on the impacts of such a monumental shift in terms of the Supreme Court. And a red headline passing the Bloomberg terminal now, President Trump zeroing in on Coney Barrett as likely Supreme Court pick. President Trump is moving toward nominating Amy Coney Barrett to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the Supreme Court, according to multiple people familiar with the matter, despite the president saying Monday that he's considering as many as five candidates. Now, to join us to help navigate through all of this is Bloomberg White House reporter Jordan Fabian. Jordan, what do we know about the president's selection process and when he might officially name the pick?
Well, Kevin, it seems to be moving really fast. And he is, as you said, as me and my colleagues just reported, leaning toward Amy Coney Barrett. He just spoke to reporters on the staff lawn of the White House and said that announcement could come as early as Friday or Saturday, probably Saturday, he said. So it looks like by the end of the week, we could be kicking off this nomination and confirmation battle that's going to be quite contentious.
All right, let's take a listen to what the president had to say in terms of how he would pick someone. Here's the president speaking in North Carolina over the weekend. Here he is.
It will be a woman, a very talented, very brilliant woman. Who I haven't chosen yet, but we have numerous women on the list.
Jordan, who else is on the list?
The other candidate who's under serious consideration, Kevin, is Barbara Lagoa. She's an appellate judge from Florida. A lot of the president's allies believe that she would help make inroads in that key swing state. She's a Cuban-American, would be the first Hispanic woman on the Supreme Court, so would be a barrier breaker as well. But as we reported, she is a distant second to Amy Coney Barrett. She's the Seventh Circuit judge from Indiana, a favorite of social conservatives, and someone who the president has really zeroed in on, as well as Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader.
I mean, it really is remarkable just how quickly this SCOTUS fight has really upended the 2020 presidential election. I mean, Friday night, the news, the sad news of really a heroic American cultural figure and leader passing away, and just how quickly now the talk has turned to the replacement. Over the weekend, Senator Elizabeth Warren, the progressive from Massachusetts, taking to the steps of the Supreme Court, vowing to fight the nomination at any cost. Progressive circles, progressive groups, the Biden campaign, former Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton, virtually every Democrat calling on this to not be brought to a vote until after the election, until the next Congress, just because of how close it is to the proximity of the November 3rd elections. Republicans saying no. This is why they were elected. This is why the Republicans gave them the majority. Voters gave them the majority in the upper chamber. And take a listen to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell speaking earlier today on the Senate floor. Here he is.
President Trump's nominee for this vacancy will receive a vote on the floor of the Senate.
So, Jordan, how much pressure are various Republicans feeling? I mean, is this not, are they not feeling any pressure? Or are they just saying, no, the party wants this. This is what we want. This is what we're going to do. Have they taken into account at all the political reaction coming from the left?
Hey, Kevin, it seems like they're moving full speed ahead. The only two Senate Republicans who've come out and said, maybe let's pump the brakes are Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, both of whom are, or I guess Susan Collins facing a tough re-election fight. But you haven't seen a critical mass of Senate Republicans come forth and say, we shouldn't do this. You have not only Mitch McConnell, but Lindsey Graham, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, who's going to be controlling these hearings, you know, saying that he's going to move ahead. But he said pretty definitively in 2016, you know, quote me if this ever comes up again, you know, if a Republican's in office, we shouldn't do a Supreme Court confirmation during a presidential election year. So you can imagine, and I should note that Lindsey Graham is facing re-election as well, and I imagine those comments are going to be pulled, if they haven't already, by his Democratic opponent and used against him. So it does seem like they've made the decision here that they might be willing to sacrifice, you know, their careers and perhaps even maybe the Senate majority in order to get a third Supreme Court justice for President Trump.
So based upon the conversations I had today with sources and what I'm gathering from you, Jordan, is that we very well could have Judiciary Committee hearings and nomination hearings for a Supreme Court justice pick while the debates are going on. I mean, that's a real tangible possibility.
That's certainly right. I mean, the debates are starting in 8 days. So, yes, that would be quite a fast timeline. But, you know, the debates are going to stretch into October. So I wouldn't rule out the possibility, Kevin.
So I got to take a break. I mean, this is even surprising to me that we could have confirmation hearings for a Supreme Court pick literally in the drum up until November 3rd. I mean, it doesn't get any more contentious than that. Jordan, I'm hard pressed to find. I'm dusting off my history books. I'm trying to figure out. I got to ask Tom Keene. I'm hard pressed to find a time where this has ever happened. I mean, this is really, really, truthfully remarkable. What are the chances of President Trump's pick actually getting across the finish line before November 3rd? Or do you think the final vote won't come until the lame duck?
I think it's hard to predict at this juncture, Kevin, but I will say that getting a confirmation vote before the November election would be a very fast timeline. You know, these nominations usually take several months, so we're talking about a matter of weeks here before November 3rd. So it would be very quick, but again, you know, Senate Republicans signaled they want to move quickly, and you know, I guess their political calculation is that not only would they get a third justice for President Trump, but this would help motivate their conservative base. But on the flip side, your Democrats are going to be motivated too. We saw, you know, millions of dollars pour into Democratic fundraising causes over the weekend. You have the prospect of having the seat of liberal hero Ruth Bader Ginsburg replaced by, you know, a Trump conservative is certainly going to be something that Democrats and liberals can rally around.
Well, take a listen to what else Leader McConnell had to say, because I mean the politicization of this is, it's always political for a Supreme Court pick, but I mean take a listen to what Leader McConnell had to say. I was struck by this because we all remember the Kavanaugh proceedings and confirmation. Here he is.
Some of the same individuals who tried every conceivable dirty trick to obstruct Justice Gorsuch and Justice Kavanaugh are lining up to proclaim the third time will be the charm.
And I mean, I don't really like doing the whole, oh, this could happen, this could happen. But Senator Ted Cruz, Republican from Texas, over the weekend, making somewhat of an interesting point that should there be a serious Supreme Court case that's decided over, I don't know, the election, there could be a divided court. I mean, Jordan, final word to you in the minute that we have left. This is unprecedented. If there's only eight judges on the bench and you know, the mail-in ballots, I mean, it's not inconceivable.
You're right, Kevin. It's not. And not only that, you know, if this, you know, somehow gets sidetracked and we, you know, we don't get a nominee confirmed this year, you know, there's some contentious cases coming up like Obamacare and other issues that could come up before the court. And then the question is, what happens? Do they take it up under you know, this 4-4 split, or do they wait until somebody is at the is on the bench and they have a full nine justices? We'll have to wait and see.
We're going to have to wait and see. What a remarkable day. Hey, Jordan, thanks for making time for me over the weekend off of now an 0-2 Philadelphia Eagles start. Coming up, much more policy and politics and Supreme Court reaction, and we dive into the markets. My name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg TV and radio. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
All right, it was a very busy day on Wall Street and in Washington. And coming up, we're going to talk much, much more about the Supreme Court replacement pick. And we're going to check in with someone who's actually working on, behind the scenes, the process and working with all the players on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Garrett Ventry joins me in the next half hour. And just a quick word on the leading contender that we're gathering for the replacement for RBG's seat. Amy Coney Barrett is who the president is really considering. Amy Coney Barrett to replace to nominate to the Supreme Court. And we should note that Barrett was actually one of President Trump's finalists all the way back in 2018, even met with him back when he replaced Justice Anthony Kennedy, and the president instead ultimately, of course, nominating Brett Kavanaugh. But Barrett allies were told by the White House staffers at the time that she was being saved for the next round of possible nominees. We're going to talk much more about that coming up. But stocks slumped, pivoting to the economy. Stocks slumped to a two-month low on concern over tighter coronavirus restrictions and cloudy prospects for more economic stimulus and a report detailing suspicious transaction at global banks. So my colleagues on Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio all throughout the day reporting on this monumental economic story. Christopher Smart of Barings, Seema Shah of Principal Global Investors, and Dean Kernut of Macro Risk Advisors all weighing in. Take a listen to what they said.
Clearly, the mood has soured on a number of fronts that has created some, you know, air pockets for the market. The dollar has spiked today. We've seen the yields falling a little bit. I think a lot of it is atmospherics.
Some of this was inevitable. You know, we've just come off the back of a couple of weeks where investors are already starting to question the valuations of equities. And then, you know, we already knew that as we get into the end of the year, as we get into the colder months, the virus numbers were going to pick up. And we're seeing exactly that. We've also got the U.S. election approaching. So this is, you know, almost a perfect storm for a lot of volatility.
It's the market's moving. The realized vol is up a lot. And I think there's concerns that this uncertainty around the election is going to stay with us for a period after the election.
Just a very interesting day on Wall Street. Brett Ewing joins me now. He is Chief Market Strategist at First Franklin Financial Services. Brett, thanks so much for coming on the program. What happened today on Wall Street?
It was a very interesting day. You know, I think this was a continuation of the correction that we started back on September 2nd, September 3rd area, where the large tech really sold off. The reopening trade seemed to kind of a lot of rotation into that and really had a lot of support relative to technology into even last Friday. But today was different. I think with all the chatter and lockdown discussion coming out of Europe, it really turned into an anti-inflationary trade day, meaning that we had a massive sell-off earlier in the day, but then what we saw was the corona trade stocks start emerging as leaders, and still we had a beat down on more of the cyclicals, financials, and materials.
You know, I find it remarkable, and I thought my colleague Jonathan Farrow captured it brilliantly this morning, cross-platform on Bloomberg Television and on Bloomberg Radio, when he talked about what Europe is going to be doing. And it's not, there's more restrictions expected in Europe, but it's not going to be that they're canceling schools. It's not, it's going to be much different than what they had initially put forth back in March and April. And still the market reaction, not really finding that nuance. But do you think that this, Brett, puts even more pressure on the people up there on Capitol Hill where I'm at, and that they've got to pass some fiscal stimulus. They're looking for some more stimulus. What does this do a day like today when every investor's staring down Europe and hoping it doesn't come back to America, hoping that there's not another uptick? What does it mean for how much more fiscal stimulus is needed at this particular moment?
Well, I think it's clear that the market is looking for some more fiscal stimulus coming out of Congress. I think with the recent heightened political situation surrounding the, you know, a Supreme Court justice nomination and possible confirmation, obviously that has increased uncertainty regarding any type of agreement going forward. Not saying that it can't be done, but we certainly have to lower the odds of it given the current environment we're in.
And even so, I've been trying to gather information about this all day, and next hour I'll ask the question to Congresswoman Judy Chu, a Democrat from California. Does all of this heat regarding the Supreme Court pick, does that take the oxygen out of the room for anything else getting done, like fiscal stimulus, like any other type of continuing resolution, when you have the Speaker of the House floating on the Sunday shows that maybe, just maybe, they try to clog floor time to take some of the pressure away from their from Republicans being able to jam through or quickly pass through another type of another Supreme Court pick? All of that we don't know. And Brett is brilliantly describing what all of that uncertainty coming out of the nation's capital is doing to the markets, injecting all of that volatility. Brett, let me ask you this. I mean, as you look at this, just from when you're advising your clients, when they're looking for the clarity, what do you tell them? I mean, if we're staring down an unpredictable election from a process standpoint, from a political standpoint, what do you tell them as they're trying to find clarity?
Well, I think that we're going to go with our initial calls that we made in late April that the market would melt up to all-time highs prior to the election and hit 3,500 prior to the election, which it clearly did that in August. In early September, we made a call that we would have a 4 to 7% correction. We have gotten that and a little bit more. I think this correction is getting closer to building a bottom formation in this space right where we are now. And I still think that we have a decent probability of hitting a new all-time high prior to the election.
Really? So you still think that there still could be some type of some more market highs? What's the one thing that gives you optimism from a policy standpoint? Maybe it's not coming out of Congress. Maybe it's something the Fed's doing. Are you optimistic about any of the moves recently from the central bank or from what the rumblings that you're hearing from lawmakers or policymakers?
Well, first to address that, I'm very pleased with the way the central bankers around the globe are handling this, specifically our U.S. central bank. I think they've done an excellent job. And what we're faced with right now is really unlimited support from our Federal Reserve. I think Chairman Powell said it best last week when he talked about, look, we're going to continue our support, but Congress needs to come together and give additional fiscal support. I completely agree with that. They need to do that. It would help the situation. There's actually people out there really suffering through this environment. Yeah. And yep. I think it's important to address their needs as Americans.
Yeah, Brett, this is probably, but that's a very important point, very important point. I want to ask you one final question. We got like 30 seconds. I know you're in Tallahassee. I know you're a football fan, but are you a Tom Brady fan now? Have you converted over to support the Buccaneers, or is that still just, you're not on the bandwagon yet? How are they receiving him down there?
I love it. I'm a big Tom Brady fan and a big Bucks fan, so very happy and a lot of excitement down here.
Well, listen, I'm not, but you can come back on the program anytime, all right? My Eagles
all
are
right,
0-2.
Thanks for having me.
My
Take
Eagles
care.
Are 0-2. It's off to a miserable start this year. Coming up, we talk more SCOTUS, we talk more Supreme Court, we talk more fiscal policy. It's a rough time to be an Eagles fan. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg TV and Radio. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
live from our nation's capital.
How do we reopen this economy? The latest on how this pandemic is impacting farmers.
What does this do for the United States' relationship with China?
Bloomberg Sound On. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
We're responding to this crisis, and manufacturers are stepping up like never before.
We're looking at 70 candidates for different vaccines.
How do we make sure a pandemic of this scale never happens again?
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
SCOTUS Monday, President Trump zeroing in on Coney Barrett as his likely Supreme Court pick. Plus, wild day on Wall Street, the latest in terms of the pressure that lawmakers are feeling now for more fiscal stimulus. We check in with Congresswoman Judy Chu, and we'll lead the show with someone working on the Supreme Court nomination process in conservative circles. Garrett Ventry joins us in just a couple of minutes. You don't want to miss the behind-the-scenes look at what's actually happening with Republicans right now. Headline crossing the Bloomberg terminal just within the last 20 minutes, President Donald Trump is moving toward nominating Amy Coney Barrett to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the Supreme Court, according to people familiar with the matter, despite the president saying Monday that he's considering as many as five candidates. Barrett, of course, is the favorite of anti-abortion rights activists, advocates who are heavily lobbying the White House and Trump personally to nominate her. Here to break all of this down is Garrett Ventry. He is the former senior communications advisor to Senate Judiciary Republicans. No one in this town knows the lay of the Senate Judiciary Republicans better than Garrett Ventry. Garrett, what's the timetable that we're hearing from President Trump for when he's going to name this pick? And then, realistically, how soon until the confirmation hearings begin?
Kevin, good to be with you. Thanks for the introduction. Remind me to Venmo you later.
Joke. For anyone listening, that was a joke. The last thing I need.
Exactly, me too. So just a joke. So good to be with you, though. Thanks for having me on. So with this, I mean, the president said, I think recently, that on Fox and Friends this morning, that it would be by either Friday or Saturday. I've heard the press secretary say it could be as soon as Wednesday, so it seems that an announcement on a potential replacement to the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg could come as soon as this week. As far as moving forward, you've got a couple options here. Justice Ginsburg was confirmed within about 42 days. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor was confirmed in about 33 days. So there's about 40-ish days till the election, so it could happen before the election. There's also a second timetable where, you know, they have a hearing. There's an announcement sometimes this week. Chairman Lindsey Graham of the Senate Judiciary Committee goes ahead and schedules a hearing for some time, maybe at the beginning of October. And then there's obviously the potential still for a vote after the election. So that part is still fluid. The only thing that has been made clear is that the president will nominate someone this week, that Chairman Graham has said there will be a hearing, and that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said this nominee will get a vote. He hasn't specified when, though.
All right, so one of the questions that I've gotten repeatedly over the weekend from just political observers is what's going on with Senator Lindsey Graham, the Republican from South Carolina, who had said that if he was in a situation like they were in several years ago, they would not want there to be a vote in an election year. Can you just walk us through this, Garrett, as someone who knows all of the Republicans? What is the conservative argument for what many are saying is a flip-flop?
Sure. And the same thing could be said about Democrats who, you know, 4 years ago during Merrick Garland's nomination, that contentious nomination, said we need nine and we should nominate someone immediately. So this is politics. But for Graham, he cited the Kavanaugh hearings as something that has sort of kind of radicalized him to an extent, for lack of a better term, is where he felt that, you know, if Democrats were in this situation, they would, you know, quote unquote, break precedent and move forward with this if the shoe was on the other foot, he said in a statement. So I think for Graham, you know, he's obviously got a tough reelection fight. This is something that the base wants as well. And so I think for him, he really obviously, I think everybody remembers his speech at the Kavanaugh hearing where he went off on Democrats for what he thought to be a smear of Justice Kavanaugh during that process. And so I think that he's made clear that has sort of influenced this decision, the way Democrats have muddied up the judicial confirmation process.
Garrett Ventry is with us. I only have him for two more questions because he's very, very busy, especially on a week like this. So, Garrett, you know, and when you're talking to members, when you're talking to senior staffers of the Senate Judiciary Committee, you know, you hear, and I really, as a reporter, don't like to go the hypothetical route, but Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican from Texas, speaking on Fox over the weekend, as well as in his social media posts, raising the issue that we're headed for a mail-in ballot election. Every side agrees, the increase in mail-in ballots. There is a possibility that the Supreme Court could have a case on its hand akin to 2000, the 2000 election. And he's making the case that that the bench has to be full, that we can't have an 8-member court with so much at stake, no matter what side you're on. Can you just inject that into this conversation? Is that a real concern that Republicans are talking about?
Well, that's something that Senator Cruz has been very vocal about, and he raises a very interesting issue with, you know, if it does go down, and I've seen reporting in other news outlets and other folks who really, I'm not a mail-in ballot expert by any means, but it seems that, you know, there's a possibility that maybe the president wins on election night, and then there's a slew of ballots that come on later and makes the election tighter, or, former Vice President Biden maybe is even declared the winner, and there's a contentious battle over who, what the votes say, the accuracy of the vote count, et cetera. And, you know, that could, just like with Bush v. Gore back in the 2000 election, that could maybe be something that goes up to the court, depending on certain states and the number of ballots. So I think Senator Cruz raises an interesting point. I haven't looked too much into it. I think most people are focused more on the Republicans are mostly focused on the process, getting the votes, right, Seeing how they can move forward with the nomination.
Well, just final question for you, just speaking of that process. I mean, I remember covering the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings and the proceedings and speaking with people like you and other folks who were opposing his nomination and people like you who were in favor of it, and just the intensity, folks, around a Supreme Court pick. You know, just all you had to do was stand on the steps of the Supreme Court over the weekend when you had Senator Elizabeth Warren vowing to fight the nomination at every twist and turn, or you had hundreds of people paying their respects to RBG. You had people chanting, at President Trump's rallies over the weekend to fill the seat, they were tweeting. I mean, this is that you couldn't, with the clock ticking down to November 3rd elections, I just am stunned that this country could during the day be tuning in to confirmation hearings before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and then that evening be tuning into a presidential debate. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting time for the country. And let me just say, obviously, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with, you know, Justice Ginsburg's family. She was a trailblazer and a tough woman who beat cancer so many times. So it's a tremendous loss for this country. But we're in the middle of a pandemic, a middle of a presidential election. You've got protests and riots in the streets as well. There's a lot of, you know, unrest here. And, you know,
but just from it, but just from it,
there's a,
and I don't mean to interrupt you, and I know I got to let you go, but just from a practical standpoint, as someone who's a communications advisor to these folks, how do you balance that? How do you balance pushing through a nomination at a time when there's a presidential election going on? Would that change your strategy in any way? When there's down ballot races going on, would that change your strategy in any way for folks like you?
No, I mean, I think for what you have to look at is you've got to look at precedent. There's been like I said, there's been Supreme Court vacancies that have happened during the election year and have been filled when the same party occupies both the White House and the Senate. So there's precedent for this. Obviously, it's an interesting time in the country. There's a lot going on with the pandemic, et cetera. But I think for Republicans, you need to try and do your best to go through the process fully, to vet the nominee fully, to have a strong and fair hearing. And Senator McConnell's made clear that there's going to be an up and down vote at some point here. We don't know when that is. And I think all you can do is message that nominee's qualifications, their background, and hope if you're a Republican, you can get them through at the end of the day.
All right, Garrett Ventry, thanks for staying late for me. That's Garrett Ventry. He is a former senior communications advisor to Senate Judiciary Republicans. He's worked on the nomination process for Republican nominations for this president. Thank you to Garrett. Now, just to reset here, my name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. We just heard from the headline crossing the Bloomberg terminal that Amy Coney Barrett is who President Trump is moving toward nominating to replace RBG on the Supreme Court. This, according to people familiar with the matter. Her supporters have pointed out to the White House that she is a Midwestern Catholic, and she may help the president secure votes for his reelection in the vital Rust Belt and Great Lakes states, where he currently trails Democratic candidate Joe Biden. And in fact, just within the last 10 minutes, a Reuters Ipsos poll came out that has Biden beating Trump in Wisconsin, 48% to 43%, but it's neck and neck in Pennsylvania. Biden ahead of Trump in Pennsylvania, 49% to 46%. Obviously, these polls were taken before the tragic passing of RBG on Friday. Garrett mentioned Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Let's play a little bit of what we heard from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell earlier today on the Senate floor. Here's the Senate Majority Leader talking about moving the process along. Here he is.
President Trump's nominee for this vacancy will receive a vote on the floor of the Senate.
And then he went on to say that he believes that there is precedent in order to have this vote, and that there is precedent to move forward with this process. Here he is again.
Some of the same individuals who tried every conceivable dirty trick to obstruct Justice Gorsuch and Justice Kavanaugh are lining up to proclaim the third time will be the charm.
I want to welcome now to the program Doug High. He is a senior vice president of media at Kraft Media and Digital. He is also the former deputy chief of staff to former House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, and Kevin Walling, a Democratic strategist at HG Creative Media. Kevin, we just saw the battleground polls. We know the background of Judge Amy Coney Barrett. How is this SCOTUS pick going to shake up the 2020 race?
Boy, that's really the question, Kev, in all of this. It's great to be with you. I think all evidence, and again, you point to the story now across the terminal, is that the president is moving in the direction of Amy Coney Barrett. She has been on record saying that that is who he wants for RBG's seat, should that have become open over the last couple of years, and that he was saving her for that seat. Of course, Democrats are going to fight tooth and nail. You spoke of Elizabeth Warren last night or the night before on the steps of the Supreme Court, talking about taking the fight to any potential nominee over these next 44 days. But I think, you know, the amazing thing to me is that for millions of Americans, half of Americans in these states, Election Day was today, yesterday, it's tomorrow, because voting is already underway in half the states in this country. And this is never before in this country have we seen, like you said, a presidential debate at 9 o'clock that evening, followed by a confirmation hearing the next morning or the morning of that debate. This is new territory for all of us. And I think you saw Vice President Biden give a speech yesterday in Philadelphia at the Constitution Center saying, let's hit the brakes on this. Let's adhere to the McConnell rule and not tamper with this seat. Just 44 days out from this election.
Look, I'm not saying, one side's going to say push the process through, the other side's going to say not so fast. But either way, this is neutral. It is remarkable to see these two events, a Supreme Court pick, a presidential election, on a collision course, Doug High. I mean, these are on a collision course, and really it's going to mobilize both bases.
Yeah, ultimately, it's going to be fascinating to watch, especially the debates, as was just mentioned. But the impact that this will have on the election itself, while adding certainly more fuel to the fire, and especially if that fuel is fundraising money, ultimately may not have much of an impact directly on voters, not just because people are already voting in some important states, but if you look at the number of undecided voters today compared to 4 years ago, there's half as many undecided voters this time around as last time around. So the universe of voters who will be swayed by this is much smaller.
You know, it's so smaller and everyone's fired up. I mean, you can't even go to your sister's birthday party without people, happy late birthday, Eileen, without people, you know, I mean, it's toxic. It's political toxicity. Take a listen to Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, who accused Republicans of hypocrisy. Here he is. Here's Dick Durbin.
The hypocrisy behind this, and it should be humiliating to all of the Republican senators who joined McConnell 4 years ago and pledged they'd never do this, ever do this in the future, and now he's asking them to reverse themselves.
Doug, I know Kevin's just going to echo that, and I say that because you're both in your respective camps. So I want to put the question to you. How do Republicans, we've all seen it on the social media feeds, how do Republicans respond to those accusations coming from Democrats of hypocrisy?
They don't. It is hypocritical, but they're going to move forward. And Garrett mentioned this earlier. Democrats 4 years ago said we have to have somebody in there now, saying we can't have anyone. I'm reminded of Michael Corleone, who said to Senator Pat Geary, "We're both part of the same hypocrisy, Senator." This is, look, politics ain't beanbag. We know that. And so it would be a mistake to think that anybody would be playing beanbag right now.
Yeah, you know who told me that, Doug High? Roger Stone. He looked me right in the eyes and I was writing an article and he said, "Politics ain't beanbag." It's one of those quotes, you know, it's like dug into your mind. Kevin Walling, I mean, but you know, let me, I say this, you know, now to flip it. What do you say to Republicans who are saying, are you absolutely nuts? If Democrats were, if the shoe was on the other foot, Democrats would absolutely do this.
Yeah, it's probably true. I mean, you're having a really candid conversation with Doug and I, you know, we got
both of you on the record saying that. I feel like I did my job today. Go ahead.
Democrats and Republicans have flipped our positions on this completely. You know, and again, as Lindsey Graham wrote in this letter to his Judiciary Committee Democratic colleagues, if the shoe was on the other foot, you probably would have moved forward with this. But again, you know, we're living in this world with all of these Republican senators with tapes, multiple tapes saying we will not hear, you know, and again, Lindsey Graham in the Senate Judiciary Committee, we will not even entertain any kind of nominee in the final year of the Trump presidency. And of course, you know, they're backtracking on that. And to Doug's point, it's a power play, right? I mean, Mitch McConnell knows where his caucus is. This is his driving ambition, is to stack the court with as many nominees as possible. He calls back the Senate not to take up a COVID relief bill and match what the House has done and at least get us to conference committee. But he's going to force this vote on this judiciary because that's, you know, been their singular focus. And I got to, you know, you got to show some respect for that and that he knows how to play the game. And this is his animating issue.
Yeah, well, he definitely, both Speaker Pelosi and Leader McConnell know how to play the political Washington game. You know, one of my favorite things that I read today from Secretary Scalia, the Labor Secretary Eugene Scalia, writing in the Washington Post about his now late father, Justice Antonin Scalia, and the friendship that Justice Scalia had with Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And yeah, you know, the three of us are sitting here and we're talking about the politics and if the shoe was on the other foot and whatnot. But I thought this op-ed really, really did capture some of the optimism still that exists in our country and in an institution like the Supreme Court. And he writes, quote, "Like many good friendships, the Ginsburg-Scalia friendship was between couples. My father and my extraordinary mother, and Justice Ginsburg and Marty. One of the rewards of the two recent movies about Justice Ginsburg is the light they shine on her husband, his humor and intelligence, and his powerful love and dedication to his wife. He was a cherished friend for my mother." And then he goes on to write that in that spirit, it's often remarked today that if our government leaders spent more time together, they would come to like and respect one another, be more civil, and achieve consensus, harmony, and wondrous legislation. I like it. I'll get off my soapbox now, but it's a good op-ed if you want to go check it out. I know everyone's all heightened 40-plus days out until the election. All right, 2 minutes left. Two-minute warning for this panel. And coming up, we check in with Congresswoman Judy Chu about the process. Doug, Kevin, what... does this take out all the oxygen of the room of getting fiscal stimulus before Election Day? Quickly, Doug.
It makes it much more harder. Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to cut a deal with Mitch McConnell if he's going to do something that she obviously opposes in the most fervent way possible.
But yeah, Kevin Walling.
Yeah, I mean, completely. I think the Senate and the House obviously singularly focused on moving a bill that will keep the government funded while at the same time moving forward with this nomination. Any other consideration, I think, is going to fall by the wayside over these next 40-plus days.
And it was just a dizzying day on Wall Street because stocks paired losses as a rebound and some tech giants tempered concern over cloudy prospects for economic stimulus and that report about suspicious transactions at global banks. So another interesting day for the street and, of course, for Washington. Doug High, SVP of Media at Kraft Media and Digital. Thank you, Doug, for joining us. And Kevin Walling, Democratic strategist at HG Creative Media. Too short today, gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us. Coming up, we head to Capitol Hill and we check in with Congresswoman Judy Chu. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. Download the Bloomberg Sound On podcast on Apple iTunes at Bloomberg.com or by downloading the Bloomberg Business app. You can also find me on radio.com as well as your radio app and wherever you get your Bloomberg. That's coming up next. This is Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
My name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. You know, regardless of which party you're in or what you think of the current state of political affairs, there's no denying the indelible mark that now the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has left on our nation's history. And I don't use those words lightly. Our country's history. Congresswoman Judy Chu is a Democrat representing the 27th District of California. Congresswoman, as you try to put in perspective the mark that RBG has left, what comes to mind?
She's had such a profound impact on women's rights, on equal rights. She is the one that has led the way for human rights in this country. And she has been a tremendous role model and an inspiration.
You know, and you know, again, just her personality, you know, her tour de force personality.
I know.
And I say it with respect, you know, and I think everyone knows a personality like that in their life. You know what I mean? And it was relatable. Mm-hmm. It was relatable, Congresswoman.
Well, of course, I've seen the documentaries on her. I've seen all her interviews. She was such a low-key person, and yet she had such a voluminous effect. She was just a giant, and she persisted. She spoke her mind through all of her dissents, and she accomplished so much in the face of so many obstacles, graduating first in her class and yet being denied jobs just because she was a woman. And yet she's one of those women in history that has made the greatest impact on our legal world, on the whole system of legal rights in this country.
You know, I'm not going to tell you who, but for folks who listen to the program regularly, you know that I come from a very politically diverse family. I'm related to Republicans and Democrats, Trump supporters, Trump critics. And one of the Republicans said, I'll never forget, during the early days of all of the shutdowns, the pandemic, they said to me, I was feeling in my head, and this Republican that I'm related to said to me, would you get out there and plank like RBG? I mean, seriously, if RBG can do a plank, Kev, you can get out there and work out. And I thought, all right, one foot in front of the other. Here we go, Kev. All right, this Supreme Court fight now, it's politicized. I mean, what are your Democratic colleagues telling you? Do you think there's going to be a vote before the election or in the lame duck? I know you don't want one, but what do you think is actually going to happen?
Well, we want Republicans to do the right thing. In 2016, we heard over and over again that there should not be a pick before the president is elected, and that was many months before the election. Now we are just around 40 days before the election, and they want to rush this through. I mean, it took them 118 days just to vote on their own COVID-19 relief bill, and to rush through a justice in just 40 days? I mean, they have to do vetting. They have to go through all kinds of procedures. First of all, it's not right for the process, but also it's very hypocritical considering what they said in 2016. So we want them to just follow what their own prescription was for that time and make it fair. After all, it is this coming president who will determine the future of this country, and this president certainly has the right to choose the next Supreme Court justice.
Congresswoman Judy Chu's on the line. She's a Democrat from California, representing California's 27th congressional district. Just, you know, Speaker Pelosi openly floating out on the Sunday shows, just some of the strategy that Democrats have, that House Democrats have, in terms of if they wanted to try to delay or thwart there from being a vote in the upper chamber on this. I think it was Chuck Todd who openly, or George Stephanopoulos, who openly asked if impeachment could happen again in the lame duck, or if there's other issues pertaining to floor time and whatnot, maybe a fiscal stimulus vote. Do you have, or is that being talked about amongst House Democrats, Congresswoman Chu?
Well, the House hasn't gotten back together yet. Actually, the proceedings for this week just started. So we will actually have our first caucus joint call tomorrow morning. And that is the time at which these kind of issues will be discussed. Clearly, there's room for some sort of change, I know. But the specifics have yet to be worked out. In the meanwhile, we need to have as much pressure on the Republicans to do the right thing and follow what they said 4 years ago.
And I say,
and also, of course, for people to get out to vote so that they can show what they feel about the situation.
Well, and I say this respectfully, and I don't like to go into hypotheticals, but Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican from Texas, over the weekend, raising a very real possible issue that as we have an increase in mail-in votes, that this could be one of the most litigated presidential elections since 2000, maybe even in our nation's history. And I get that this is a hypothetical, but are you concerned at all that there won't be a full bench on the Supreme Court in the next 2 or 3 months when there really could be some important political cases that relate to the election?
Well, one thing is for sure, we do have teams of people that are ready to take their cases to the courts, and it's going to be determined state by state. Now, in this context, I just have to say that there are states that have had successful vote by mail for years, and we have states like Washington who have been doing vote by mail for years, and there's virtually no fraud. We in California are going entirely vote by mail, but we've had a successful vote by mail system. So I want to allay anybody's fears that there is fraud. Nonetheless, we know that this will be challenged in court. And, well, I think that it will be in the lower courts and would take some time in making its way up higher. Nonetheless, I just hope that we do have a Supreme Court that is fairly constituted by the person who actually is able to win the election fairly and squarely.
All right, Congresswoman, we got a minute left, and I just want to ask you about the fires that are ravaging through parts of your state. And can you give us an update in terms of just where that process stands? Of course, so many people praying for all people impacted by these wildfires.
Well, I am especially concerned about it because the Bobcat Fire, which is now one of the biggest ones, actually I think it is the biggest one ever in LA County history, has grown over the last 2 weeks. It went from 5 acres to 500 acres to 103,000 acres, and it is only 15% contained. Now it's threatening homes on the northern end, and so there's been mandatory evacuations. So we have huge praise and admiration for our firefighters who are up there building and strengthening lines to protect those communities in the northern foothills. In the meanwhile, we have to make sure that we have a fire management plan that will prevent these fires from accelerating in the first place, right, and that we deal with climate change.
Congresswoman Judy Chu, such a busy day for you. I'm so appreciative of you calling in to make time for this program. She's a Democrat from California, and of course, we're all thinking about the Bobcat fires and a dizzying day, another massive story. Never enough time. Coming up, we check in with Rick Davis. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg TV and Radio. This is Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. You know, it's been a long couple of days. Here I am trying to catch my breath on Sunday. I'm thinking maybe Carson Wentz will give me something to look forward to. What does he do? He bombs. He didn't just bomb, he tanked. A total embarrassment to the city of brotherly love. Nothing. Now I'm 0-2. You know? Now I'm 0-2. And then, to top it all off, I've got these staffers from the West Coast, Los Angeles. Couldn't even say it to the congresswoman. I didn't want to get too political. And they're texting me, oh, see that? The Rams beat the Eagles. You know, I get it. I get it. I get it. But I will say this, as I told my friend, the Philadelphia sound guy, or gal, who hit the boo button, there's no fans in the stands, and Carson Wentz still managed to get booed because of the boo button, only in Philadelphia. My name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. I don't know, Rick Davis, are you an Eagles fan? I take it not. He's a partner at Stonecore Capital. He used to manage the late, great Senator John McCain's 08 presidential. And a Bloomberg
Kevin, after that introduction, I'm afraid to say a word. I don't want to make you mad.
Oh, no, you're a Cowboys fan?
Oh, definitely not. You know, I've gone through a transition. I was a Redskins fan, then a Jets fan, and now I'm a Chargers fan. So I'm moving all over the country.
How do you even – how? No loyalty, Rick.
It's beyond the idea. I go with whoever I can get tickets from.
Well, I don't think I'd be welcomed back to Delco if I ever pulled that. But it's just been a brutal. It's, you know what? It's been a brutal 2020. That's something we can all agree on. All right, the SCOTUS pick. I mean, it's injecting a lot of volatility into this race, to say the obvious. But everyone always says, "Oh, this is unprecedented. This is unprecedented. We've never been here before." Is that true, Rick Davis?
Oh no. I mean, I think there have been 14, Supreme Court picks during election year, seven of which actually got confirmed in that year. So, I mean, this is not as rare as people are making it out to be. And even in just the last few years, this has now occurred twice. So it comes up. It's a reality of life, and we need to deal with it. And there are pluses and minuses. I would say this volatility has frozen the election, which I know doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but that's 2020.
Well, I mean, it's and I say this because it's, again, I keep going back to what some Republicans are saying, which is if we have a situation where the election case ends up at the Supreme Court and there is not a full bench, who does that even benefit? I mean, this could get so incredibly crazy that it's hard to comprehend, and I hate doing hypotheticals, especially as a journalist, but this is all on a collision course.
Well, I mean, it's not such a hypothetical. You know, in our lifetime, we've already had the Supreme Court weigh in on one election in, 2000, and it wouldn't be a shock to anybody that there is a debate over who the winner is of this election. I go two ways. I still believe that there is a chance that this is a, blue wave election similar to 2018. But if it's not, I believe it will be a close race. And in that case, I believe what Donald Trump tells us, because every time we don't think he's being serious, we're wrong. If he says he's going to dispute the election, he says it's going to be stolen from him. It's one thing if you're a candidate saying that, it's a different thing if you're a president saying that.
Well, I mean, and that's just what I find. That's just like what I find remarkable, Rick Davis, is that here we are. I mean, with the Supreme Court, one day there could be a confirmation hearing, and then that night there could be a presidential debate. I mean, it is it's almost so out there that it's inconceivable. But I don't know, to put on my political cap for a second, who does it help? Because I think both bases will be so incredibly mobilized at the prospects of the Supreme Court.
Oh, I totally agree with you, Kevin. It's going to excite everybody. Everybody who's already on a Richter scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most excited and committed to this election, everyone's already at a 10, so they're going to go to 11 on this one, right? And yet, the one guy who I think it really benefits, in the short run, it's Biden, because it does freeze up the election. Nobody knows who he's going to appoint this week. This is another lost week for Trump, right? There's no win or lose this week, but the fact that he hasn't made any gains on Biden is probably a disadvantage for him. But for the balance of the election, the next 40 days, I would say it inures to Trump's favor, because he's got a talking point now. I mean, he's been talking about the down economy as it relates to the pandemic, that relates to social justice. I mean, none of these things on the headlines are good for him. He's got a bad deck of cards, and now someone has finally given him a new deck of cards to play with, and it's got to be better than what he's had to deal with.
All right, so we do this thing on the show called What's on Your Radar, and today there's two we got it because there was a SCOTUS day. I'm going to tell us what's on our radar, because we got to hit these other two big stories. The first is the Oracle deal, because no one even knows that the ByteDance TikTok Oracle deal is going to be followed through upon. Doubts emerged Monday about Oracle's deal to take over TikTok, reading from the terminal, as President Trump said he may still renege on his approval, and the Chinese government signaled reluctance through state-owned media. I've been reading up on this all day. I've been trying to figure it out, asking sources and whatnot, Rick Davis, but at the end of the day, I still think it's important. I know I want to remove the politics from it. I still think it's an important precedent-setting story, because it signals that the U.S., regardless of whether a Republican or Democrat is in the White House, is telling China that the same limitations they put on intellectual property restrictions from U.S.-based companies in their market, the U.S. is now starting to do the same. How's that for reciprocity?
Yeah, we actually used to criticize governments for picking winners and losers in their economy. We believed in a free market system where the best companies that provided the best service at the best cost would actually prevail. Not anymore, and
but,
not from
but
a
it's,
Republican
but it's,
president.
But it's also – it's difficult to do so when there's national security concerns. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I think it's fascinating to see how the internet – it's fascinating, but that's definitely on my radar. And I think what you just laid out and the free market argument, when you've got Secretary Pompeo speaking at the Nixon Library the other week saying essentially, yep, well, what have we gotten from a post nearly 50 years after President Nixon went over there to Beijing and said, you know, that this is going to be a reciprocal relationship? I don't know. One can make the case that it hasn't been too reciprocal. Okay. And then President Trump, Iran is the other thing on my radar. President Trump said he would call on the UN security. I'm sorry, that's from a while ago. Additional sanctions potentially on Iran, and the State Department also looking at additional sanctions on Venezuela. So lots on that front as well, Rick Davis.
Yeah, and the Iran thing is just a component part of this overall peace agreement that he's reached with UAE and Bahrain, bringing Israel into the coalition of Arab states that are threatened by Iran. And Iran is the gift that just keeps on giving. I would anticipate many other countries in the Middle East opening up diplomatic relations with Israel, with the eye toward building up their own defenses in order to contain Iran. I mean, we've already seen the UAE working out a deal for F-35s with Donald Trump as almost a quid pro quo for the peace agreement. Who cares? We got peace in the Middle East. We don't see that very often, and so his tactics are different. But he's getting to a place where most other presidents have failed.
Yeah, and I think Jared Kushner, you know, Jared Kushner's even getting praise from some Democrats for just how he's been able to navigate through that the normalization of those ties with Israel. Hey, Rick Davis, partner at Stone Court Capital, former campaign manager for John McCain's 08 presidential campaign and a Bloomberg contributor. I always learn when I talk to Rick, and I'm always filled with gratitude that the fact that Rick Davis is on my radio show. It's a pinch me moment every time, even though he has poor taste in football. I'm Kevin Cirilli. This is Bloomberg 99.1.